football on Off the Ball.
You know, I think you could argue maybe Graham Burke, Jack Byrne, technically right now, are more influential as to what Shamrock Rovers do.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Well, hi there and welcome along to episode 80 of the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with me, Tom Malone, and Johnny Ward is going to join me on the line very, very shortly as well. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews and crack. The first half of the pod is free to air and the second part is exclusively for members. So be sure to sign up by going to offtheball.com/join this week for members. We'll focus on the action at Royal Ascot next week. And we'll also get Johnny's charity bet. So make sure you subscribe. Johnny, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. Just at your race course today. So something a little bit different and enjoying a really fantastic racetrack. I actually wasn't here since Frankel won when he beat St. Nicholas Abbey. I think you were telling me Frankel was 17 now, so that'd make, 14 years ago. So it's cracking City York. Really, really, like, we have these kind of ideas around, like, you know, maybe British society, and, you know, we have these ideas that, you know, maybe British society has been in, the state of the nation has been in a better state post-Brexit and all that, but you come to York and it's really vibrant, very friendly, great old city, and a cracking racetrack as well.
Yeah, it really is. Are you going to be there for the weekend as well?
No, I'm working at Downpatrick tomorrow. So, I'm back on the plane this evening, looking forward to a couple of days at Downpatrick. There was just a kind of a work-related thing going on here at the track today. And we're in a box that literally is pretty much over the finishing line, but also kind of you're looking head on, you're looking side on, and you're looking over the horse as well. So I'm really looking forward to, actually, like, a lot of people now, I notice at the race, they go to the race and they watch the race on their TV or on their phone, on the TV or whatever, and to see horses in the flesh is actually something that you lose sight of how good it is. And I'll put up maybe on Instagram one or two of the finishes, because it's a magnificent viewpoint of the action here at York.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. Looking forward to that. Well, we're just going to cast our minds back a few days before we look ahead to Royal Ascot. And, well, we reflected on the action from Epsom and what you're looking forward to it. And, well, it ended up in a bit of a one-horse race and a one-yard weekend, because Aidan took the three group ones. And, well, Lamborn, he was, he never saw another runner, really, did he, in the Derby?
He didn't, no. I mean, and the Derby was, I suppose, it was built up to be an excellent renewal of the race. Massive field by the standards of the Derby, and we had the Guineas form in terms of ruling court, or so we thought, and we had Lamborn, we had Delacroix, we had the line in winter going in there, and we had, a Derby that looked deep enough, I suppose, to reflect the history of the race. It was a funny race. I know there were plenty of you chatting up Lamborn here last week, and I was sort of poo-pooing the fact that Australia, who, despite being a Derby winner, I was like, is Australia going to get a Derby winner at this stage of his life? He's a 10 grand stallion or whatever, and he probably looks like a horse who stays well, but Delacroix, he never got into any rhythm at all. The race was over for him very early. The line in winter, we've seen Aidan O'Brien talking about him going back in trip subsequently, and Lamborn, for me, the story here was kind of Wayne Lorden, to be honest, Tom, was just the fact that, you know, I was at the Curragh when he had that horrible, horrible fall in the Irish Derby. And it looked like, you know, Wayne might never ride horses again after that. And he was probably lucky enough to get out in one piece. But to come back and give such a brilliant tactical ride on a horse who probably isn't the flashiest and isn't the fastest Derby winner, but to get him on the front end without really overexposing him in the early fractions, in the middle fractions of the race. You know, what the Derby kind of means at this stage is hard to weigh up. Like, if Lamborn retired a stud now, I'm not sure he'd be much more expensive than Australia. You know, he's a Derby winner. But what does the Derby mean in terms of your prospects as a stallion going forward? I'm not sure. But Coolmore still loved the race. Aidan O'Brien loves the race. And it was a really, really good performance. You might see him in the Irish Derby. I'm not sure he'd necessarily be a massive draw at the Curragh. But for me, the story of the race was Australia having his first Derby winner, something Dubawi hasn't done. And Wayne Lorden, I thought he was just excellent on the horse. Lovely words from Aidan O'Brien afterwards.
Yeah, that was kind of a majesty. One of the good guys from the weigh-room, and I suppose segues nicely into another one of the good guys from the Irish weigh-room, getting the promotion that I suppose his talents deserve in Colin Keane in his new role. And he got it off to the best possible start at Newbury yesterday with a winner. It's an exciting time for Colin Keane, isn't it?
Yeah, this is, you know, this happened extraordinarily fast. You had the Kieran Schumark fallout from the Guineas and Field of Gold, who we'll talk about later in the show. And I wasn't expecting this, you know. I wasn't sure, you know, what Colin's overall role was in the Judmont picture. But I suppose it reflects the fact that Ger Lyons, you know, Colin and Kerry, obviously Kerry Lyons are partners, so he's absolutely embedded in that family and in that operation for a long, long time. But, you know, Ger has always been good to let him ride horse. Even if Ger had a 9 or 10 to 1 shot in a race, he'd be happy enough, it seems, to let him ride for Noel Mead in recent years to help him his race for the jockey's title. But I think one thing about Colin Keane, I'm sure you agree, Tom, is he hasn't really ridden in enough big races for a jockey of his standing, and that's the thing. I think he needs to be. Colin's a top rider, but you don't become a top rider in the best races unless you're riding in them relatively regularly, because that's the difference. It's like you know, peak sport is where the margins are so tight for error at the top, and you have to really be part of that regularly to get better at it. And I think Colin is a top class rider, but he needs to be riding at Royal Ascot and every day, as he will be next week. Otherwise he'd barely be riding at Royal Ascot at all. That's just the way it was. You know, he was attached to Ger Lyons yard. Ger has very good horses, but he wouldn't have the money or the firepower to rival Coolmore day in, day out. So this is a reflection of Colin's talents, and he obviously rode Field Gold in to win the Guineas very early after the announcement that he was going to be riding more of the horses. And now we have the announcement that he's the retained rider for Judmonte. It's very, very exciting for him, and it'll make the Jockeys Championship somewhat more interesting here. But I don't think that's comparable. Winning the Jockeys Championship is fine, and you know, it involves a lot of hard yards, but you really need to be, you want to be riding in those big races on Saturdays. Even coming here to York today, you can feel there's a buzz around like British racing on the flat when you have these big meetings that is not comparable at all in Ireland on the flat. And Colin needs to be making the getting the plane over to these meetings more weekends than has been the case. It's going to be very exciting for him.
Yeah, so is that thing about being champion jockey? I suppose once you've done it, and he did it kind of aged, what, 25 or 24, so he did it so early in his career, it's not, I'm sure he'd like to retain it, but you know, I imagine it's been done now, and he's very ambitious. So it's his age as well. He's only 30. So Aidan O'Brien often says that, you know, these riders sort of don't sort of come into their own as proper Group 1 riders, and sort of they're mid-30s. Because like you say, they have to get all that experience in Group 1s and Grade 1s and riding all around the world and just getting used to that. Now, obviously, Colin is a very good... he's a very good temperament. He's a very even-tempered kind of guy. That's very clear. He doesn't get too high when he's up or too low when he's down. But that practice will massively stand to him. And this, you know, if this works out, I mean, he's going to be in this job for quite some time, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't, you know, if you get a job with AMO or something like that, or you get a job with particular other owners, it comes with a bit of a health warning in the sense that, well, we have a history here of, you know, a trigger-happy kind of owner, certainly with trainers, but that's not really the case here. This is an old-style Arab operation, would have been old-school through Khaled Abdullah, and, you know, as much as, you know, this happened from the Kieran Schumark fallout, I don't think Colin has any worries on that score. Like, he ultimately, he's here to do a job, but this should be his job for a long time going forward. And I suppose unless maybe such a thing that Judmont think that they need maybe somebody who's based in Britain more often, but it won't be for lack of ability or anything like that. And Colin will have the best of both worlds at the moment. And just on Aidan's comment, like I spoke to Shamie Heffernan, who felt like he was riding as well as or better than ever in his 50s, like, and I definitely think flat riders can go a long, long way. They can be riding brilliantly in their late 40s, mid-40s, late 40s, even in their 50s. And Colin at 30 is like, it's probably like a goalkeeper in his mid to late 20s.
Yeah, it is. There is a touch of that. It's just that complete condition. And what did you think? I know, I saw Billy Lee's about 5-4 during the week for the Irish Jockeys Championship. I thought, you know, it's a small price to tie up a lot of cash for a long time. But I can see Colin easily relinquishing that title given the demands he'll have. You know, we saw him at Newbury there during the week. He'll be away every Saturday. You know, he'll have to go to France and stuff like that, and the odd Sunday as well. Like, it'd be very difficult, you'd imagine, to retain that Jockeys Championship.
It will, and it does make it more exciting. I think Billy would be the people's champion at this stage, in that he's given it a couple of goes and he's a very popular guy. He's a brilliant rider as well. And It's like Colin having the best of both worlds. At a lower level, Billy has the Paddy Toomey horses. I mean, even this evening in a stakes race, he's a choice between two very good horses trained by Paddy Toomey and Willie McCreary. So he'd be picking up the best of both worlds there. And he's as a freelance rider, as well as that, he's going to have massive support as the title race goes on. Then you look at the likes of Dylan Brown McMonagall. I felt he was going to give it a good go last year. That didn't really materialise. And Dylan is one of these more global riders where he will end up riding in France and in Britain at weekends. But he could be sort of interesting as well. But yeah, you'd have to think Billy will give it a very good go this season. And like, Colin would have to stay in touch because he is going to miss a lot of weekends. And this is the other fallout from this is Gary Carroll, who only had, I think, maybe 7 winners for Gerry Lyons last season from about 45 odd rides. Like, he's going to pick up a lot more first choice rides for Gerry Lyons. And Gary wasn't a million miles off being in the title race a couple of years ago. He's going to really benefit from this as well. So I think there'll be a lot of happy people from this. Colin will be happy, Billy Lee will be happy, and Gary Carroll will be happy, and maybe one or two others as well.
Yeah. James Ryan probably picks up the Gary Carroll rides there within Gerry Lyons as well. It seems like it's going to work out for quite a few people in Ireland anyway. I'm sure the likes of Ross O'Ryan and Oisín Murphy might not see it that way. But let's move on to Royal Ascot, Johnny. It's such a great week, isn't it? I mean, the Tuesday of Royal Ascot, it's almost heresy to say it, but it's easily comparable with the first day of Cheltenham, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know, I have to say, watching Royal Ascot last year, I wasn't at Cheltenham now last year, but Royal Ascot to me had a lot that Cheltenham didn't have. It had a proper kind of global aspect to it. It had exceptionally competitive racing day in, day out, and it felt like there were no filler races, really, even though you have your share of handicaps and you've a longer meet than Cheltenham. It felt like every race really, really had something going for it. I still haven't actually gone, but it's an excellent event. Like, if you're an event junkie, something to go to. And it's not as kind of la-di-da as maybe you think. It's like, you know, everyone has a place there. You have to dress up, but it's great crack, and it's obviously a lot of fun. It's a day out, and it's going. Obviously, a couple of horses like the Lake Victoria not going over, and Albert Einstein, that's disappointing, but it's going to be a hell of a meet.
Just on that as well, what like when you're, you know, it's a long week as well, not unlike Cheltenham, but any sort of bits and pieces of sort of betting advice you give to people? I personally love to play the Whirlpool, the old place pot, and that tends to have at least a sort of 500-1 sort of dividend every day. But there's what kind of gets your juices going? Because like you said, there's lots of competitive handicaps too.
Yeah, I met a guy here last night who got the pick six up in Hove yesterday, right? So he figured that there was a rollover, and but he had to do the pick six at Hove dogs, you have to actually go to Hove. You have to go to the track. So he got a lady friend to go to the track, dropped her a few quid, she put the money into the pick six for him, and it copped.
Hove is down, like, where was he travelling from? Hove is down near Brighton, isn't it?
Beside Brighton, yeah. Mm-hmm. So needs must, you know, have bet will travel or whatever, or give it to a lady who'll travel anyway, or lives in Hove in this instance. So she goes down to, and she's like, I'm not sure I want to walk home from the racetrack with all this money on me, and I kind of want to stop for a pizza on the way home. What are we going to do here? But he basically found this little opportunity from the rollover. And it got me thinking, like, we forgot about all these like great rollovers used to have on the tote. And you mentioned the Whirlpool. Like, I've just come from a meeting here with head by the RNG staff, and they're on about the Whirlpool. And the Whirlpool is primarily Hong Kong people betting, but Hong Kong people bet, like, they bet, and they bet into the pool. That's how they bet over there, and it's a great opportunity to look at, like, the place pot. It's not a bet that people do enough, like, for events like Cheltenham, and particularly Royal Ascot. There's enough money there to justify it. It's a great fun bet, really difficult handicaps, a great fun bet to play your different perms across the different races, and the place pot is a great bet. And ultimately, you know, the normal stuff as well, Tom, just bet sensibly. Don't go chasing your losses. It's a long week and all of that. And I do find Royal Ascot meet that I wouldn't have to have a bet every day or any day at times. I'd really just enjoy the action, but definitely look out for the Whirlpool options.
And any particular horses, just so before we go through that, any of those races in depth, but there are any horses you just thought, oh, I'm really looking forward to this guy for next week?
Albert Einstein, but you know, you give up Charles Darwin when he was running in Navan, you said he was a good thing, and I wasn't so sure based on his performance first time out, but he was very good. Then he's a beautiful pedigree, and he's going to be interested in Coventry. I am looking forward to seeing Field of Gold. I think he might be a bit short, to be honest. We'll talk about St James Palace Stakes, but the Gold Cup as well. I think the Gold Cup is kind of more intrigue, you know.
Yeah, no Kyprios. Like, it's sort of been shaken up, and we don't know if Illinois truly gets that trip.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there was the, when Homer faked his own death in The Simpsons, Marge's sisters had a gravestone which said, "We were richer for having lost him." And there is a sense in this race that Kyprios not being in the race makes it richer in some respects, because we could see Kyprios try to go down like the Yates route and win it again and so on. But like, as you say now, you have really interesting horse coming in, unproven in terms of stamina. And there will be long shots in that race with more stamina kind of in their page and record that will become interesting. And just on Kyprios, like, it's great that he is able to go out in one piece again, because he's had such a checkered career in terms of his health. But I do feel he's been taken out of the race, makes it very interesting.
Yeah, it usually does, doesn't it? It usually does. You know, it's probably a loss for fans and maybe marking the race. But I suppose of all the places you don't really need to hang a day's racing on a single horse, is probably Gold Cup Day at Royal Ascot, to be fair. Just quick thoughts on the Saturday action. You and Absurd are at York. He'll be there tomorrow for the Road to the Ebor Listed Stakes. I assume that's sort of a, as the race suggests, a sort of a stepping stone towards maybe trying to land that, because Absurd's a funny kind of horse. Mile 6 really seems to be his trip. I'm not sure he truly gets further on the level.
Yeah, he is. He is that. I think the first time I backed him was at Royal Ascot when he was second to Vauban, and he actually, Frankie Dettori rode him that day, and he looked like he could become a proper Melbourne Cup contender. And maybe that's kind of been, I think that's one of William Mullen's remaining ambitions as a trainer, is to win the race. But I actually think Absurd is short enough here. Just looking at, we'll speak to our Hills ambassador later on, but 13-8 is the top price. I could see why Hills are taking him on. Like, Al Karim beat him as Chester. Now, he's slightly better off at the weights here, Absurd, relative to him. But Al Saqib, for me, on form, would have every chance, if there's a bit of a pace in the race, of potentially you know, beating Absurd, who for me looks short enough. I find him a hard horse to get right, to be honest. And this might be his ideal trip. For a horse rate 109, it's very rare to see a horse rate 109 run regularly over hurdles. So he's a fairly unconventional kind of training routine. But El Cordobes as well is definitely not out of it. He's only four and he's on the up. So I feel he's a bit vulnerable here, and it's interesting he'll be ridden by Danny Tudhope, who actually won on him at Chester, since which time he's been ridden by Kieran McAvoy, Danny Mullins, Harry Cobden and William Buick and Colin Keane before that. So he knows many different riders.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite the list of riders, to be fair. A quick word on the Scurry at Sandown as well. Obviously, this, you're just going to wear the listed race just in the shadow of Royal Ascot. Like, you know, it's a bit like races the week before Cheltenham, isn't it? The fellas here, you're just thinking, oh, they might be able to nab a bit of black type or something, or here's an opportunity to win something. The near side of Royal Ascot, maybe Star Mamas might fall into that category a little bit, that three-year-old filly chance here for her in the Scurry.
I'd be inclined to back Town and Country again. Like, I wouldn't be following British sprinting day in, day out around that. But like, Town and Country, trained by Henry de Bromhead, Colin Keane takes the ride. Her run, she was 33s for a reason, because she went into that stakes race at Cork the last day, the Polonia Stakes, rated 87, which gave her, went into a stakes race rated 87, even as a three-year-old, would give you plenty to find. It was a typical Billy Lee ride that day, Bugsy. She was held up and he sort of nursed her into the race. Sometimes I think horses can be a bit flattered when they're ridden like that. There can be a bit of a pace collapse. But ultimately, she beat Babouche very readily. And First Instinct, the 98 rated winner, was well fancied for Willie Haggis. And she was closing all the way to the line. She really, really stayed on well from the furlong pole to the end of the line. And she is, at her price here, she's fours with Hills, so I'd be inclined to have a couple of quid in her each way. I think it's interesting Henry de Bromhead, who's obviously not associated with sprinters, comes over here with her, but she's definitely on the up, and taking on her own age group here, she has a chance.
Anything else for you on the Irish cards over the weekend? As you mentioned, you're going to be trekking to Dunpatrick from York this afternoon, so is there anything there that'll make it worthwhile?
Downpatrick is relatively tricky over the 2 days. It's fairly low grade jump stuff. Sunday be the better of the two cards. It's not bad action at Gorn, Bugsy. The first maiden, it's interesting to see Daytona for Jack Cleary and Aidan O'Brien. Jack Cleary is picking up some very good rides for Aidan O'Brien. You see all of these Wooten Bassett horses appearing, and he is one of them. The race that kind of interested me was later on in the card, if I can get it up here. There's this conditions race later on, six-runner race to close the card. Corridor, Crystal Clear, Fleur de Chine, Dingham, Eastwatch, and Viking Invasion. Very interesting how Eastwatch goes here, because I think I was at Gorn the day he won over course and distance. He absolutely hacked up on that occasion. He'd run well first time out. He was well back. There was plenty of chat about him, sort of make believe, so locally kind of bred after his Tipperary run. And he was backed into 11 to 10. He won by 9 lengths that day in April, earlier on in the season. And what was interesting that day was it was yielding ground. And maybe he's kind of wants yielding ground. And he did disappoint at Leopardstown the last time. But going back to Gorham, which is a kind of a unique track, he should take a bit of beating on that early run.
Good stuff. Well, this is the Racing Pod on Off the Ball. If you listen to the free version of the podcast, we'll be leaving you here. But if you're looking for more, including our look at all that action next week at Royal Ascot and Johnny's charity bet, go to offtheball.com/join to subscribe and get the full podcast with all our racing tips, insight and stories from the week's action.